This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Mark Lundholm's comedy is about addiction, and it's a subject he knows well. He's described himself as a former criminal, mental patient, and homeless wino. Mark Lundholm is appearing in a much different condition when he comes to Kalamazoo on November 20th. He will perform at the Dalton Center Recital Hall at Western Michigan University. His performance is sponsored by the Community Healing Centers and the Drug Treatment Court Foundation of Kalamazoo County. Mark Lundholm, thank you very much for taking some time to speak with us.
I appreciate you guys paying attention to this event.
Kind of take us on that path from being an addict, being homeless, and eventually finding your way to being a comedian.
The short version would be that addiction is something I struggled with for a long time, and to some degree still do at 55 years old and 25 years sober. It is a mental health condition that doesn't exactly leave us, but invites us to come back to the easy, safe, comfortable place, which for an addict is always immediate chemical relief. And that could be these days sugar or food or sloth or something that's going to fix it in the short term and create a bigger problem long term down the road. I was distractible. They didn't use the term ADD back then. In fact, I come from a dysfunctional family where I was the oldest of five kids, and ADD in our house stood for all different dads. So that's the comical, not clinical way to look at it. But for me, it was always attention was a drug back then as a kid, and funny was a false shield to prevent anybody from getting to know me really well, and it was a safe place to hide. Throughout the years, it became less funny and more painful, the choices I made, you know, whether it was smoking pot as a young kid. I started drinking early. You know, my parents both drank. They still do, as a matter of fact. All nine of them still drink. It has a way to surface no matter what. If you're not dealing with the issue, it deals with you. The ultimate kind of bottom for me was living on the streets of Oakland, California in the 80s, and I was suicidal and about 120 pounds and long hair and foul mouth. And sometimes I miss the long hair now. I don't have bangs anymore. My forehead goes back.
You don't have any hair, do you?
I don't now, no. I gave up. I surrendered to that fight maybe 10 years ago. But that's a humility thing. I just kind of let it go. But the bald look is kind of popular right now. I don't know why, but it's all I can do. It's not a choice at this point. But I still got a lot going on underneath the scalp that is maybe unhealthy initially. And in the show, I talk a lot about my disease isn't substance abuse, but first thought wrong. My first thought is inappropriate, inaccurate, self-centered, whiny, criminal, judgmental, some form of wrong, where if I follow that first thought, I'm in trouble quick. So the recovery process for me is basically the filter between first thought wrong and next right thing. And sometimes it takes a while, you know. Sometimes my second thought is wronger. I know that's not correct grammar, but it works for me right now. I got to a place where I was 29 years old, and I was laying in a motel room that was $6 an hour to get into. That tells you what kind of place it was. And I put a loaded gun in my mouth and pulled the trigger. And it didn't go off. The gun jammed. And my first thought was, man, I suck at everything. I mean, I'm truly unsuccessful. How do you not pull this one off, you know? So in a lighter description, it was the end, but the beginning. And so, since then, I got into a hospital 4-point restraint mental facility, and I did 30 days in treatment for drug and alcohol addiction and learned about some of the psychoses I had, which were in need of remedy, and moved into a halfway house. And it was slow climb from, you know, street to something that was better and safer. And I started doing comedy while I was living at that halfway house. I volunteered to do comedy in jails and rehabs and shelters and prisons and the first show I ever did was in San Quentin State Penitentiary.
You and Johnny Cash.
Yeah, you know what? He was actually in Folsom Prison.
That's right, yeah.
Which the connection there, the segue you just made, was my 25-year recovery anniversary was in October, and I was at Folsom State Pen doing a show for about 400 inmates in that very same cafeteria with armed guards that Johnny Cash did his famous song in. It was pretty humbling for me. But that's where I spent my anniversary. I've been to over 500 jails and prisons in 25 years in a bunch of different countries and every state in this country repeatedly. And that was the foundation of my stage work. But since then, it's been corporate workshops for management about motivation or teamwork, specific mental health addresses to the AMA or some kind of intervention conference or clinical health professionals. I've done a lot of live shows for recovering audiences, for normal audiences. Normal meaning most. You know, most people aren't addicted to anything. They're not. Most people, they do things that are foreign to me, like they show up on time because they said they would, or they tell the truth without any witnesses or some kind of police statement. They don't identify personally with every episode of Cops when they watch it. They don't talk to the screen and tell the criminal, run, my brother. This is some of the stuff that's addressed in the show coming to Kalamazoo. And I make this show a bridge between normal people and the rest of us, which are afflicted, addicted, convicted, or at risk of falling back into that addictive process. It says a little bit will be good, more is better. And it's still never enough.
But as you say, there are addictions out there which perhaps we don't think of as addictions. Like you said, food, caffeine would probably be one.
That's one of mine now. I have two now. I have caffeine and work. I tend to say yes to a lot more work than maybe is necessary. But I'm young enough, relatively speaking, healthy enough physically to do the work. So. And I love what I do. I love the fact that I can invite a whole group of people to laugh at something they don't have to be in the middle of anymore. But the addictions go way past the obvious narcotics or alcohol. I mean, there's shopping and there's the addiction to Facebook or iPad or going to the gym. I mean, there are people addicted to being in recovery. It's all they want to do.
So in your case, was it a matter of realizing perhaps that you had a personality which led you to be addicted to something and finding the right things to be addicted to? You know, work, if you've got to pick something, is better than, say, heroin.
Yeah, for me it is. For me it is, because it's hard to do a show if you're asleep. But the obvious thing for an addict mentality is that, I want to do one thing. I want to do all of that. I want to do it all day and nothing else. So aside from the addictive gene I have in my anatomy, and if you want to talk to professionals, they'll tell you that it's a disease. And there's a strand in some of us, in our DNA, that says, I'm going to use it, abuse it, lose other things, and repeat it. And that's as simple as I can keep it for the NPR delivery here. But it's not a matter of being a personality, like an addictive personality. I think it's a genetics thing that some of us struggle with. Most people don't. Most people don't have that in their DNA, you know. Alcohol is not the enemy. Work is not the enemy. The internet's not the enemy. Other things, smoking is not really the enemy. In my eyes, it's Mark, and those things are detrimental to everybody around me, and it's going to cause somebody some pain and consequences. So I don't even dabble in those things that are a quick fix. The slow is better for me, the slow process. Hard work, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. But if I do all of that, all work and nothing else, I'm not a good dad. You know, which I'm a good dad. I got a 6-year-old boy that I raise with my ex-wife, the plaintiff, who is, she's 18 years sober, and she's a fantastic lady. We're just not married anymore to each other, but we're married to that kid for the rest of our lives. So there's some balance there. As soon as I hit the tarmac in San Jose, I'm dad full time. And when I travel, I put dad on the shelf, unless I'm talking to him on the phone, saying goodnight or saying prayers, whatever it is. But and then I go to work as a speaker or a comic or a representative of a faction of society that is struggling with the mainstream. But I find balance is the secret, and balance starts with what my motive is. You know, my motive for the show coming into Kalamazoo is entertainment primarily, information or access to help secondarily, and third, trying to be an honorable spokesperson because they've given me the platform of their attention. I mean, you doing this now is a gift to me. You can't say there's anything significant about this compared to the weather in the Philippines or the health care crisis right now in the country. There's a lot of stuff to be paying attention to. So, you know, a lot of us are honored that you're giving this some kind of heat.
When you're performing as a comedian, are there certain things about addiction which you find maybe a little too touchy, maybe a little too sensitive, or is it all out there on the table in a way to try and deal with it as honestly as you can?
Honesty without compassion is cruelty. And honesty without a filter is sometimes just plain stupid. So there is a boundary I have when it comes to the collateral damage of addiction, abandonment or abuse of kids, drunk driving. There are certain things that have cost people their lives. And without being a soapbox minister type preach, reach, or teach voice, I can approach those subjects on the periphery in a humorous way about the mentality of the people involved or the sheer idiocy of wanting to do something over and over again that's detrimental and try it one more time just to be sure it was painful or wrong. I have very few taboos, and I've learned how to do that in an eloquent, funny way so that they're less of a threat to people and more of a healing factor. You know, humor was given to us as a balance for unfairness, you know, in life. Life's not fair, it's not unfair. But we really remember the unfair. And if life were fair, truly, I'd be in prison for the rest of my life. And so when somebody says in public, man, that's not fair, I always kind of think to myself, yeah, ain't it great? So there's a different lens I have to look at life these days, which is more of a humorous look at what is potentially a threat. Humor will remove the stigma of a certain behavior. It will, and not to make light of it, not to take it lightly, but on the other end of that, there are people who take themselves so seriously, nobody else has to. So I don't make excuses, and I don't have any secrets, but the stage work is very transparent about forgiveness, about a good look at what my part is, and being responsible enough to say, well, I'd have a disease that says, I'm going to use something that normal people would dabble in or leave alone, and I'm going to make you pay for it. To a certain audience, it's potentially hilarious because we're not doing it anymore. You know, I think that humor will remove shame, it will lessen threat, and it will invite trust. So I get people who tell me things after a show in the lobby outside that during the meet and greet. They'll tell me things they've never told their parents or their priest. And it's not so much they trust Mark Lundholm. The humor has opened up that valve.
There was a story in the Daily Nebraskan last year in which you were quoted as saying, it seemed ironic to me that I was not a stupid person but kept making stupid choices. And I wonder if that is perhaps a perception that people have who've never been in a serious problem with addiction, that they just think people are weak-minded or they're making dumb decisions, as opposed to, as you say, it's a disease. Was that also a misperception that you had as you were going through it?
Oh, yeah. I would kick myself continually because I was making horrible choices. And it was based on self, you know. My motive was, let's fix me. And, you know, normal people fix things that are broken. Addicts fix on things that are broken. And so once I was shown that I had other options, you know, like IQ became the tool instead of the weapon. I'll always say that intelligence for an addict is the biggest hurdle there is, because the smarter you are, the slower you accept what's going on, which is, you know, looking at your behavior. I'm going to outthink a disease that's a force of nature. It's like standing in the path of a tornado and just being smart. I'll outthink it. I mean, that doesn't even work with diarrhea, for God's sakes. Just sit there and think positive. You know, show them your credentials. This disease is a force of nature. It rips through neighborhoods, and some houses are leveled and some are untouched. And the path of the tornado is nothing you can control. So it's best just to get out of that neighborhood, you know. So I don't dabble. I don't tempt myself. And I don't hang out with people or go to places where I'm going to be at risk, because my own nature takes over and then everybody's in trouble. But IQ is like a hammer. You know, a hammer can be used to, you know, remodel a home or build a fence to provide security for your family. It also has a claw on the back of it you could put in somebody's head. Now, you can't blame the hammer. You know, it's IQ is a tool. How you use it is going to serve the community, or it's going to devastate you and other people who get close to you. So I'm just sometimes it's best for a while just to drop the hammer, not be so smart.
So as someone who has been an addict, and now obviously you must meet people all the time who are at some stage of recovery, what do you think is, you know, maybe a few bullet points here that people need to get sober? What are the things that a community should focus on if they want to take on this issue of addiction?
Well, the community at large is made up of most, you know, most people, which is normal. It's normal to have most people not really wrap their head around what they consider a moral choice or a weakness, to use the word that you put out there. It is. It appears so on the surface, but I've got suggestions for individuals who are struggling with this. That rule number one, and this is what I live by every day: if I have to keep it a secret, I'm not doing it. That'll change your whole life. You know, if I can't tell my son what I did when I was on the road, I don't do it on the road. That'll fix a lot of stuff just right there. And the second thing is, if I'm addicted to it, I'm addicted to all. It's not selective for me. I mean, I can take anything that seems benign on the surface, and because of my nature and the force of nature that addiction is, I'll overdo it and I'll abuse it. I'll lose what I have that's valuable, and I'll repeat the process. So those two things have kept me clean for a long time. The other part is that there's got to be some kind of service to the community. I'm more selfless than I was in my addiction, and I was given a lot of gifts. You know, I'm not a stupid person. I'm really funny through trauma as a kid and survival techniques that I used, which are command of the English language and the ability to manipulate a group or a room. Those things serve the community now. So what I like to do is say that it's pretty hard to be depressed, addicted, or in angst when you're helping other people.
Mark Lundholm, thank you very much for your time. We hope you enjoy your visit to Kalamazoo.
Oh, I sure will. I was there about 8 years ago. I had a blast, and it's tough to get me to talk, isn't it?
Oh, really tough.
Yeah, I'm one of those shy guys.
Hard to get it out of you.
I'm one of those shy guys, and yet, you know, on the plane when I'm flying, you'll never know what I do. I'm really quiet. I'm still a bit of a sociophobe in public when it's not on my terms or when I'm not on stage. So this is a joy to be able to share this with you guys, and thanks again for the attention and the highlighted focal point that you've made this show.
Mark Lundholm will perform at the Dalton Center Recital Hall at Western Michigan University on November 20th. His performance is sponsored by the Community Healing Centers and the Drug Treatment Court Foundation of Kalamazoo County.